From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, February 6, 2018. And on this day, Maine's Corrections Commissioner defends a plan to close several county jails in the state. And Maine Democrats and Republicans are introducing two separate bills to address female genital mutilation. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
Watching the effort to create Maine's recreational marijuana market has been a lot like observing a rocket take off from Cape Canaveral. Lots of anticipation and more than a few scrubbed launches. But in Augusta, there's a quieter movement afoot that could significantly affect hundreds of Mainers in the state's medical marijuana industry. As Steve Missler reports, it comes at a time when the recreational law appears to be taking a bite out of medical pot sales.
Alicia Melnick helped lead the 2016 campaign to legalize adult-use marijuana, and she's kept a close eye on the legislature's tortured efforts to get the market up and running. But lately, she's been spending a lot of time in the Health and Human Services Committee, where lawmakers are working to overhaul the medical cannabis program.
There's a lot of medical marijuana cultivators who have their eye on the adult-use program, and I think as they've seen some things stall here, more focus has been put on the medical side.
Melnick now lobbies for the Medical Caregivers of Maine, a trade organization that also represents patients. Maine's medical cannabis industry exploded between 2014 and 2015, with taxable sales topping off at nearly $25 million. But last year, the number of patients dropped by more than 18%, and taxable sales also fell when it became legal for Mainers to cultivate and possess their own cannabis. And now, lawmakers are considering changes to the medical cannabis law that Melnick says could benefit caregivers by creating a tiered system that would allow them to grow more plants and serve more patients.
So steps that would allow caregivers to truly both be regulated-like and enjoy the benefits of being a small business.
Republican State Senator Eric Brakey of Auburn says the proposals would also ensure that those who are currently exploiting gray areas in the existing medical cannabis law are better regulated.
Many caregivers have really found loopholes in the law to kind of stretch their business and do things that were not initially envisioned.
The new regulation would include mandatory testing and labeling for caregivers aspiring for commercial size growth and inspections for smaller ones.
You know, I think it's time that everyone plays by the same set of rules, or at least very similar set of rules.
Dan Walker is the lobbyist representing Wellness Connection of Maine, which runs four of the eight cannabis dispensaries in the state. His client has been clamoring for more oversight of caregivers, some of whom might be carving into Wellness Connection's market share without the same regulatory burden.
There's lots of sales going on out there. There are caregiver stores opening up in people's communities, and they don't have the level of regulation that the dispensaries do.
Republican State Senator Deb Sanderson of Chelsea says an overhaul of the medical program hasn't happened since the legislature enacted a bill she proposed in 2012. Sanderson says revamping the medical program could also mean alignment with the recreational industry in certain aspects.
There are areas of commonality, you know, like the labeling, the testing, the packaging. Those are all areas that apply to both. You could also have a consolidation at the top of oversight, regulatory control, compliance, inspections.
Some caregivers see the changes as a way to grow their business and position them for entry into the recreational market. Others are nervous that an alignment with a recreational program could mean the end of Maine medical cannabis altogether. Sanderson says it's important that the medical program is protected because it has a distinctly different objective than recreational pot.
There is a lot of work being done that takes away the euphoric effect. They want the pain management. They want the anti-anxiety. They want the anti-seizure properties.
At the same time, Senator Brakey's committee will consider changing or eliminating the list of debilitating conditions that currently qualify for medical treatment. That means obtaining a patient card for medical cannabis may no longer require having cancer, glaucoma, or ALS, as it does now.
What we're looking at transitioning to is potentially just if a doctor feels that it is medically helpful for their patient, for whatever condition that patient is suffering with, just like any other medicine, the doctor should be able to make that recommendation.
Brakey's also proposing doing away with the restriction that patients can only get cannabis from one caregiver or dispensary.
You know, if you need a pharmaceutical, you don't have one CVS that you're allowed to go to.
It's no coincidence that such proposals are gaining traction at a time when many predict that the recreational market is at least a year or longer from launching. There's also a lot of uncertainty about a federal crackdown on recreational pot. But Congress continues to reauthorize a law that protects medical patients and caregivers. And just last week, the governor agreed to delay rules that would impose new restrictions on caregivers. That will give lawmakers more time to overhaul a medical program that legal cannabis entrepreneurs hope will provide a payoff, at least while the recreational program remains stalled. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Maine Corrections Commissioner Joe Fitzpatrick is defending his department's proposal to close 5 county jails and regionalize oversight. Mal Leary spoke with Fitzpatrick about a plan that's drawing fire from county sheriffs and some lawmakers, and he has this report.
Commissioner Fitzpatrick says the report and recommendations are in response to a state budget directive to develop a plan to make the county jails more efficient. He argues his plan will save millions of dollars a year by establishing the Maine Jail Commission, which would have oversight over county jail budgets, and create 3 regional jail authorities to improve cooperation among the county jails and create new efficiencies through central contracting for goods and services used by the jails. He rejects the argument by some sheriffs that the cost of transporting prisoners to a regional jail would cost more than the current system that already relies on transporting inmates from one jail to another.
Consolidation, regionalization speaks to efficiencies that could equate to $9, $10 million in savings. That really outweighs the cost of some extra transport miles.
In an interview with Maine Public Radio, Cumberland County Sheriff Kevin Joyce, the president of the Maine Sheriffs Association, argued the sheriffs are already doing a good job cooperating in several areas to keep costs down and that the plan won't accomplish its goal of achieving savings. Fitzpatrick says it's clear that more can be done.
If they were cooperating with each other and working together, as Sheriff Joyce suggests, I would expect that you wouldn't have people who are sleeping offenders on the floor and have nowhere to put them.
And Fitzpatrick says the sheriffs and county officials knew he was developing a plan because he was mandated to do so in the state budget. He invited them to a meeting at the department in December to suggest ways to improve the efficiency of the county jails.
Person after person got up and gave a little bit of a speech on why they just needed more money. When they knew that the governor wouldn't support just handing them more money and leaving the systems be the way they are.
Fitzpatrick says the report is simply recommendations to the Criminal Justice and Appropriations Committees, as required by law. He does not expect the department or the governor will be submitting legislation to implement the report. He says it's up to legislators to decide if the recommendations are worth pursuing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
This week, Maine Democrats and Republicans are unveiling 2 separate but similar bills to address the universally condemned cultural practice of female genital mutilation. The Democrats' bill is backed by several district attorneys and members of the Somali and Sudanese communities. But as Susan Sharon reports, the Republicans' bill has been linked to what the Southern Poverty Law Center describes as the largest anti-Muslim hate group in the United States, with a chapter here in Maine.
It's a practice no one likes to think about, a practice in which female genitals are cut or removed for non-medical reasons. According to the World Health Organization, more than 200 million girls and women have undergone the procedure in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, sometimes with lifelong complications. And even though it's been a federal crime for years, some Maine lawmakers want to ban it. They also want penalties to extend to parents who allow it.
No child should ever be subjected to violence. When it comes to this horrific form of child abuse, we must have a zero tolerance.
Governor Paul LePage is backing a bill sponsored by Representative Heather Psaraki and other Republicans to criminalize female genital mutilation in Maine. A similar measure failed to pass last year. At the time, the ACLU of Maine criticized it as an attempt to single out behavior that is commonly attributed to certain religious and ethnic communities as different from other forms of abuse. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center has obtained emails that show Representative Psaraki is enlisting support from an anti-Muslim hate group.
Our concern is that State Rep. Heather Psaraki is interacting with a group called Act for America that has a long history of Muslim bashing.
Heidi Byrick is the director of the SPLC's Intelligence Project, which tracks hate groups around the country. She says the bill is a thinly veiled effort to demonize Muslims and Islam in general.
Act for America basically exists to make all of us fear Muslims and think they're undermining our culture, imposing foreign practices like female genital mutilation, or, you know, or have a bunch of terrorists running around in the country that threaten our lives.
Act for America bills itself as the NRA of national security, and according to its website, trains citizens to help protect and preserve American culture and keep this nation safe. It's known for passing anti-Muslim legislation. In an email to members, the president of the group's Maine chapter calls Psaraki our sponsor for FGM. He also says the national group is providing a speaker for the news conference, a victim of FGM. And he signs his emails with a quote that says Islam is evil.
They support the bill. They're opposed to child abuse.
Representative Psaraki says Act for America gave her a call and asked if members could help with the bill the way many other interest groups do. But Psaraki says that's all she knows.
I never attended a meeting. I really don't know much about them, except they are a group that reached out to me to support my bill.
Democrats unveiled a similar bill this week that has the backing of several prosecutors, including Megan Maloney, the district attorney for Kennebec and Somerset counties. Maloney says a state law would provide another tool to bring charges in the event that someone engages in the practice of FGM in Maine.
I know your question is, why do you need it in state law if it's also illegal in the federal system? The state would be looking at prosecuting crime that occurred in Maine, whereas the federal government generally is more interested when it crosses boundaries.
But in a written statement, Attorney General Janet Mills says she's unaware of any incidents occurring in Maine. If there were any, she says she would charge someone with aggravated assault or child abuse, both felonies which carry prison terms of up to 10 years and 5 years in prison, respectively. More than two dozen states have passed FGM legislation, and Heidi Byrick of the Southern Poverty Law Center says many of those bills have passed at the urging of Act for America. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, February 6, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.